This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The number one way to drive home. This is the Triple Threat.
Rich is like, you got to explain this Kyriakis thing. So does it drag me down even further in your eyes, Rich, that I used to like a soap opera?
Significantly.
Wrestling, gambling, soap opera.
You're a bad person.
The Venn diagram of Rich and Sean just circles.
You are a very bad person, Peter.
This is The Triple Threat with Sean Pendergast and Rich Lord on Houston's sports leader, Sports Radio 610.
Okay, now hang on a second.
Missed a golden opportunity there.
Okay, no, wait, Rich, did you listen to that audio?
I did.
Okay. That audio was, that was you and I talking, obviously. We were not on the air when we were saying those things.
Oh.
That was BMAC recording us while we were talking during a break?
You know, that I was, sounded pretty subdued.
Yeah,
because I wasn't even like, near the mic.
I sounded like off-air, Rich, and I wondered why.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, this is what happens every day at roughly 5:36. I say I'm rolling for the promo, and then 2 minutes go by, and you guys just jabbering. So,
oh, so this
I
is
was
how
rolling,
you rectify
waiting.
It?
I
by
was rolling,
outing us on
waiting
the air?
For you for the promo.
Wow.
So this now counts as airable material. When you're
well, it
waiting
just aired,
for,
so.
For us to do the promo.
Wow, you may be dead to me, B-Man.
God, you are a terrible person. Oh, my God.
Wow.
Man, I got to be on guard all the time around this guy. Now, do you record our meetings with Ryan after the show?
They post
because I say some bawdy things in those meetings.
They post daily on Snapchat.
They do?
Have you
no,
been,
of course not.
Have you been meeting with the Russians?
Exactly. All right. Well, hey, at least now we know where everybody stands.
Wow.
Rich and I are clear with each other that
Rich is
an educational experience.
Yeah. The mic is always hot.
Okay. I guess that's a good lesson to learn. Thanks a lot, B-Mac. Appreciate that.
I'm
glad Cecil Shorts is here to hear that as well, because he spends the 4 o'clock hour with us, which last I checked has two commercial breaks in it that he sits in this studio for. So Cecil, just so you know, Big Brother is watching at all times.
I see.
Can you turn Cecil's mic? Cecil,
oh, wrong mic.
Yeah, wrong mic. There you go.
I'm sorry. There
yeah,
we go.
That's okay. There you go. That's one way to keep away from the wrath of BMAC, is just talking to the wrong mic and you'll be fine.
Seasoned radio veterans have made that mistake.
Yeah, I did last week. But Cecil Shorts is here with us now. How you doing, man?
I'm awesome. How about you guys?
Doing good. You've got three kids on the way.
Yes.
Triplets.
Yes.
I always want to lead off with this just so that the people know going in that if we reach a point in this hour with you where you know the fuse gets short or there's something wrong with the energy level, which never happens with you, but just in case, people need to know your situation.
Understand.
So the first and most important question is, how is Mrs. Shorts doing?
The wife is doing well.
Good.
She's healthy. The babies are healthy. She's just resting, which is driving her crazy because, you know, with multiples, you can't exercise, you can't do anything. You have to just be there.
And you told us last time, she's an athlete.
Yeah,
she played basketball, right?
Yeah, Mount Union, yep. So, yeah, she's
not happy about being inactive.
She's used to working out and all that stuff. No, she hates not being, she hates being inactive.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Cecil, if you look at that clock up in the corner, she may not be as far along in her pregnancy as you thought.
Okay, Rich, nobody knows that.
For those we have a clock in the studio that goes backwards.
And it just started going forwards.
Backwards.
Rich, the second
just
you
as
said
I said that.
That.
Yep.
It's
exactly.
Like it's got a life of its own.
Yeah.
It started going forwards
at
a normal speed. Yeah. That's weird.
Anyway, you're right. Nobody else cares.
Nobody cares. Yeah, nobody cares. So, I'm glad to hear Mrs. Shorts is doing well.
Thank you. That's the important
and
stuff.
There's going to be three new Shortses here
very soon.
Imminently. Yeah.
Yes.
In the meantime, you at least get a chance to sit with Mrs. Shorts and watch all kinds of football on television, at least. If she can't go anywhere, do you sit there and watch?
She actually watches games with me. Like
she
watched Monday night with me.
Okay, good.
She's upset that she knows a lot about football. She's like, I shouldn't know this.
Oh, but it's like it's seeping into her brain.
No choice.
It's seeping into her brain.
That's funny.
So it's cool.
Yeah. Well,
Sunday night was a lot more entertaining than Monday night.
Absolutely.
Sunday night was incredible. We had vowed at the beginning of the show we're going to turn the page on last Sunday and look ahead to next Sunday. And then I remembered, well, Cecil's coming in at 4 o'clock. So we'll get to the Titans in just a minute. But I'm sure that people are curious your thoughts on the big wrinkles coming out of the Texans game. And I think probably the two most talked about things were Bill O'Brien, some of the game management things that went on in the game.
Grunt catch, yeah.
Yep, and then the Deshaun. Non-catch, depending on your point of view. And Deshaun. We'll get into Deshaun in a second. I want to get your thoughts as a former player when there are decisions that are made in a game where if you're, you know, focused on the game and you're realizing you're looking up at a replay, whatever it may be, where you're going, I think coach is making the wrong decision here. I ask that because JJ at one point late in the game looked really frustrated with the tempo of the offense. Mm. You know, can you speak to a, and not specific to Bill, you've played for a number of head coaches, but just the mood of a player when you're in the unit that's off the field or you're on the sideline and you're watching these decisions get made, you go, man, we worked all week and these little things are might affect our chance to win here.
It's frustrating because it's out of your hands now. So you're trusting the coach to put you in the best position to win. And when you're doing your job, but they're not necessarily living up to theirs or doing their job, it's frustrating. So like on that call with Gronk, I understand it's 2 minutes. So you can't have the challenge flag, but your job is to give us the best, put us in the best situation to win. So if you have to call a timeout to argue or to do whatever to raise, you know, raise eyebrows or raise attention to that call, that's what you should be doing.
Especially when it's a timeout that you can't carry over to the second half.
I mean, that was a 28-yard catch.
Choose it or lose it.
Yeah.
Like that's a big field position like type thing.
Huge.
So if you call a timeout in that situation, and you bring it, I mean, you can walk on the field and talk to them like, hey, can you guys look at that? Just plead with them. Do something.
Yeah.
The players can respect that.
Yeah.
And they'll understand. I mean, like you said, this timeout you can't get back. It's only like, I think at that time, about a minute and a little bit left, minute five, something like that. So you got to take that risk because if that's a catch, I mean, obviously they scored.
Yeah.
And that hurts you. You go down 21-6 instead of 14-6.
Punting with 4.5 minutes to go down 14, what did you think when that decision was made?
That's tough. That's a tough call.
Yeah.
That's a tough call. I kind of understand what he did. Luckily, it worked out for
him.
Yeah,
no, it worked out. I said to Rich, Cecil, it's like if you're at a blackjack table, it's like hitting a 19 and getting a 2.
Is it the right call
given the circumstances?
Given the circumstances, but I mean, I can see both ways. I can see why you trust your defense, but at the same time, you probably should have went for that.
Yeah.
And probably gone and got it.
He came, O'Brien, as close as you can come without flat out saying, I messed up, I should have called the timeout. But he pretty much acknowledged in the days after that had he to do it over again, he probably would have done it differently. And look, we're all human. Everybody makes mistakes.
Absolutely.
And you know, a mistake should not be something for which you are condemned. But when it happens on a regular basis, how concerned would you be if you were on that team right now, that something like that is going to come back to bite that team in the butt?
I'll have heightened awareness about it.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair.
And like you said, it's out of your control.
Yeah.
So you're doing all you can do, but you can't trust your coach to make the right decision in a clutch situation. I mean, that's huge. I think that's one of Mike Tomlin's downfalls.
Mm-hmm.
I think he just doesn't make the right decisions in the clutch situations that a head coach needs to make. And that's a big deal when it comes to being a head coach.
Yeah, well, when it's a league that we're told by head coaches that, hey, this is a league that comes down to 8 or 10 plays a year.
Yes, it does.
You know, like the difference between 6 and 10 and 10 and 6 is not a drastically big difference.
Yep.
What did you see in watching Deshaun Watson on Sunday?
He looked very rusty. He looked like he played 17 snaps all preseason. And it's interesting because, I mean, hindsight's 2020, right? So it's easy to say. You look at Tom Brady. He played the whole year last year, Super Bowl, but he still played 70-plus snaps in the preseason. Whereas a guy came from injury, played the first 7 games, didn't play the last 9 games or 8 games, whatever it is, and didn't do anything in the offseason and then didn't play in the preseason. Not that I think.
Barely played.
A sophomore going into the year, a second-year guy needs reps. Especially coming off of injury.
Yeah, he only played 6 games the previous year.
So he played 6 games and then plays 17 snaps in the preseason. Yeah. He looked rusty. He looked like he was holding the ball. Romo said it over and over again. He was waiting for guys to get open instead of throwing to the spot and letting them get open. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense, which is crazy because he came in right away last year and was throwing guys open.
So to me, he looked a little timid with his knee. running around, he didn't look the same. He didn't look as explosive. He looked a little concerned. Not concerned, but this is the thing. When you injure yourself, and you saw with JJ, that first half to me, JJ was not timid, but he wasn't himself. And in the second half, you've seen more pressures. He's like, okay, I can do this. My body's fine. I can trust my body again. So maybe he got that going through his head, especially with the pocket kind of closing a little bit with him in the pocket. So,
as well as they played on the back end defensively, I thought the biggest disappointment on that side of the football was the lack of pressure on Brady. And we all talked about it all week long. It's always been and always will be the key to beating the Patriots, and that's getting Brady out of his comfort zone, and he looked very comfortable.
He looked very comfortable. I was surprised how well their offensive line played. I didn't expect that. I expect kind of J.J. and Clowney to dominate. But then again, they've been gone for a while. Like I said, to me, they looked rusty. Well, I think they did a good job on Clowney, honestly. And then J.J. came on. Whitney, honestly, was a no-show kind of.
Yeah, they were using Whitney kind of strangely in the second half. Yeah, I noticed the number of snaps they had him playing almost like an inside linebacker.
They didn't have him
rushing the passer.
I definitely liked how Kareem Jackson looked at safety. He looked very, very comfortable. He looked more comfortable at safety than he did at corner in his previous years.
So you don't move him then, I guess, coming up this weekend with Kevin Johnson.
You got to keep him. And then I think
does Colvin get a shot outside now?
You got to have Colvin outside.
Yeah.
And then maybe bring one of the new guys, Sharice White, inside. Yep. Or I'm not sure if Webster's playing this
week. Maybe Bademosi. I don't know.
Webster's not going to play.
So we'll see.
Bademosi played more than just special teams in New England. He was on the field. He was like their fourth cornerback. So I mean, he's seen a lot of action.
You know what I didn't like about the defense? I thought the secondary played very well. We were in a lot of man in third and medium, third and short. But they kept putting Zach Cunningham on Gronk.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at the film, and you see, so they put Tyrann Mathieu on James White, and they put Zach on Gronk and double him with the safety. But it was Gronk. I mean, I guess Gronk is going to be Gronk, right? And then you had the quarterback.
Yeah.
But it was little things, whereas maybe you switch it up. Maybe you put Zach on a running back and then put Tyrann on Gronk to try to see if he can play the ball better. Because on the touchdown, if Zach just turns around, he'd be able to see the back shoulder.
Yeah, he almost provided a pick for Gronk because he shielded. Kareem couldn't get over to help out.
He shielded Kareem. So he just turns and looks at the ball. Kareem can knock it down or intercept it, or even he can knock it down. So little things like that.
All right.
Will's a good route runner, smart player, good speed, does a lot for our offense.
Scouting report on Will Fuller from Bill O'Brien. The reason it's pertinent is because Will Fuller looks to be back in the lineup this Sunday against the Tennessee Titans. He should be back, according to reports. They expect him to be back from his hamstring injury. Now, he is on the injury report for today. He was a limited participant in practice today. And I guess I'll just run down the list here real quick, as long as we're mentioning it. Johnson Bademosi with a knee, Jadeveon Clowney back and elbow, Sammy Coates hamstring, Kiki Kuti hamstring, Duke Ejiofor hamstring, Will Fuller hamstring, Christian Covington had the thigh injury in the game, DeAndre Hopkins is dealing with something relative to his foot, and Kayvon Webster still dealing with an Achilles injury that's expected to keep him out for a little while longer. But getting Will Fuller back will be nice. Did you, in what you watched on Sunday, Cecil, and Cecil Shorts in studio with us here for his weekly visit, in what you saw on Sunday, were there things going on the field where Will Fuller would have made it significantly easier for this team, or were the things going on Sunday just things that, on your average Sunday, probably, you know, the Patriots just showed up and they were the Patriots that day?
Patriots were the better defense that day than the Texans were on offense. I don't know if Will would have came back and done anything drastic because of how Deshaun was playing. He wasn't accurate. He wasn't himself. Like I said, he didn't look comfortable out there. So I don't know if Will would have did anything. Now, having another playmaker out there, because there were times where there were some drop balls or some plays where you want your guy to come up with that play. He could have done that, but I'm not sure he would have been a drastic difference maker out there.
So over this Sunday, though, what does Will Fuller bring to the table for this team?
Well, it brings another dynamic. I think you saw it last year with his speed, his ability to run routes and get off the press. He can take the top off the defense as well as make plays and bring the attention off Hopkins. So you have somebody on the other side that plays outside that can bring the attention off Hopkins. Now that opens up more things for a Bruce Filler or Jordan Thomas or Ryan Griffin. But also I think for me, Sunday, why not run the ball a little more? if Lamar had 15 carries for 99 yards and Blue, I seen your tweet, Sean, mm-hmm. Blue looked good running the ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He did.
And it was a fast pace that I think came out the second half. The fast pace offense that yep. you got some good runs. Why not keep doing that?
It was a 10-play drive. I think they ran the ball yeah. 7 times on that drive. Yep. And it was right up the middle, too. Line looked really
tricky.
Good. Yeah. Yeah.
That was the drive that had the 12 men on the field toward the end of it, right?
Towards the end of it.
So why not do that a little more and try to open things up for or get Deshaun comfortable? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Run the ball, some more short game. But yeah, with Will Fuller coming back, it'll definitely help the offense in general.
Yeah. So Ryan Clark is part of ESPN's NFL crew now, retired defensive back, mm-hmm. former Pittsburgh Steeler, I believe.
Redskin, too.
And Redskin. You go to LSU, Ryan Clark? Is he an LSU guy?
LSU,
okay.
LSU
so he was on, I believe this is from, was he on Get Up? Okay. On ESPN. I think this is from Monday, either Monday or yesterday, maybe yesterday. And Ryan Clark had this recommendation for Deshaun Watson.
Stop listening to Bill O'Brien. Don't do what he says.
What do you mean?
If Bill O'Brien is telling you to do something, do the opposite.
That's his coach.
Bill O'Brien is the head coach. He's got this perception that he's a quarterback guy. One, all his quarterbacks get hurt. Whether it be at Penn State, all the guys that have played in Houston, Deshaun Watson, obviously, he was at practice. It was something different. We watch Deshaun Watson, and it's week one, and people be like, RC, you're doing too much. Mm-hmm. It's only 1 week. This was Michael Jordan, right? That's what Dabo Sweeney said. Mm-hmm. And guess what? I believed it. He played with a freeness. He played with a flair, with an exuberance that I can't be stopped. I'm going to make big throws. I'm not going to second guess myself. I'm not going to question what I feel. I watched him question himself on Sunday. I watched him play in the pocket and not want to run, not want to escape. You can't be that guy.
Part of that just be coming back from an injury and getting your legs under you again?
Well, you know what? And maybe I was wrong to say that he went through it in Clemson and that he would bounce back and it wouldn't faze him. But when he did leave the pocket, when he did run, he was successful. And we saw those things late in the game when he begins to play more free because they were trying to come back. That's the guy he is. That's the guy he has to be. I've listened to Bill O'Brien.
All right, so Cecil, how would it go if Deshaun Watson openly defied Bill O'Brien and didn't listen to anything that he said?
Yeah, he might be out of here. That's the easiest way to lose your job in the field. Just do the exact opposite of what your coach tells you to do. Now, last year, he wasn't saying this. He listened to him and had the best 7-game stretch of any rookie quarterback ever. So
that's like, what makes the take so odd is like, okay, for one thing, it's one game against the greatest defensive mind of our time. So let's pump the brakes a little bit. But it does. It ignores the fact that, like, we were praising Bill O'Brien last year for the innovative playbook he did, the wrinkles he added. It looked like he added some things from Clemson's playbook maybe last year. The QB's getting hurt thing, I think, is funny that he puts that on O'Brien. Like, okay, so it's O'Brien's fault. Yeah,
that's what caught my ear. Yeah.
Tom Savage broke his leg. And then,
Come on now.
Yeah. And then, of course, the one guy who would never get hurt was Iron Man Brock Osweiler.
Hey, there you go. Got the shirt on.
Yeah. Rich's favorite player, Brock Osweiler.
I'm telling you, I'm channeling my inner Brock.
Yeah.
He and I are simpatico.
Yeah.
If I'd grown up to be a football player, I would have been Brock Osweiler.
Instead, you grew up to be a radio host.
Number one, we all, I think, acknowledge I'm the luckiest bastard on the planet, and he is the luckiest guy to ever play in the NFL.
You two are kind of kindred spirits now that I think about it.
Yeah, I can throw really hard, and I usually don't know where it's going.
Yeah.
there you go.
That's
He's
about
very
it.
Rich right now.
Or
too.
I used to be able to throw hard, father time.
Do you have concerns, Cecil, over, I think that some of the things that we're talking about at the back end of that cut are valid points to dig into. We needed Maria Taylor to ask the question before we got to it.
I thought it was Marie.
Nick Saban called her, right? Yeah. But we did need her to kind of bring up the injury part of it. How big a concern is that for you? Just maybe not long term, but at least for this season, Deshaun coming back from this knee injury. Did you see any sort of tentativeness on his part?
He didn't look comfortable with me in the pocket when he was scrambling. He didn't look comfortable. His eyes weren't downfield. If you watched him last year, even when the pocket was collapsing, he was still looking downfield. Sunday, looked like he was looking at the line of scrimmage, looking at who was coming at him, who was getting near his feet. So I think with time, with reps, And with his coaches him listening to his coaches, not doing what Ryan Clark said.
Yeah.
he'll improve on that and get better. I expect him to play well this upcoming week.
He got our attention a little bit when he dropped a comment after the game about how he thought he was lacking in energy, and we all wondered what that meant. And he clarified today to basically explain that when he said that, he was talking about, you know, like early mistake in the game. And he could have been, like, the sideline was quiet and you know, that
so a leader, per
he
se.
Should have been more of the kind of guy to walk around and, you know, pat guys on the back and just say, look, it's going to be fine. We've got plenty of time, that kind of thing. And he was disappointed in himself for not having what he called the energy to be the leader he needed to be.
Similar to what you've seen from the Honey Badger when Kevin Johnson made some mistakes out there.
Absolutely. That's exactly
right.
Just
knowing behind, yeah. Letting them know you need to step up and make some plays.
I'm glad you
I love seeing that.
I'm glad you brought that up. That's a type of leadership. The Texans have had good leaders, you know, like through the years. And yeah. This team has good leaders. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember a guy, and I know you were here for one season. Like, mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember a guy who led, and I liked it too, Rich, who led like that, who's not afraid to stand up and say, dude, I communicated to you right before the snap what you're supposed to do.
Yep.
And the coach is getting into the Honey Badger. And the Honey Badger's like, it ain't me, no, man.
I told him.
It's this guy, right? Like standing up and doing it.
And Kevin Johnson was being a little flippant about it.
Well, he had his body language would
his
say
body
he was.
Language was
he
bad.
Had elbows up on
but
the
it
bench.
Was, it was more than once where he didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah,
yep, that's right.
It was more than once when he was looking at somebody with his arms up.
Yep.
It was more than once that he was looking like, hey, what's the call? What's the call? Who I got? And he's not producing.
What is it to have a leader like that? Have you played on teams that have had a guy like that before on the sidelines that just like not afraid to just light into a guy where it's fair? I'm not saying like just a hothead, but light into a guy that's fair. Like different leadership styles.
Yeah, and you need that. You need somebody to hold you accountable. You need somebody to confront you. And when they confront you, you know it's coming from love.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that that person is doing their job and everything they can to help this team succeed. And they want you because they know you can do your part and help this team. So a Gerald McCoy, a Quan Alexander, they both were like that in Tampa Bay with me. You saw people like Maurice Jones-Drew in Jacksonville that was with me. Those guys, you need those guys on the team. And what I saw Sunday with the Honey Badger, that's what you need.
Mm-hmm.
You need somebody that's going to step up, that wants to win, and that know that you can help this team, but you got to do your job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I said earlier that regardless of how good Martinez Rankin might become one day, he's still an untested rookie assigned with being the blindside protector for your franchise quarterback. How dicey is that to you?
That's extremely dicey, but you drafted him to play. The only way he will get better is by playing.
Right.
It kind of is messed up that Henderson went down how he did.
Yeah.
Because now you got to throw him in the fire. But, hey, it's the NFL. Next man up. You got to be ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Cecil Shorts in studio with us here for his weekly visit. As we look ahead to the Titans, and we'll hear from Bill O'Brien in the next segment about Mike Vrabel and the Titans. I'm curious, you played for Mike Mularkey for 1 year in Jacksonville.
I did.
Do you think he got a raw deal in Tennessee?
No. I think Mike Mularkey is stubborn. I think he's stuck in his ways. He wants to do things a certain way. So when ownership or other coaches want to work with him, he's like, nah, my way is the best way.
Mm-hmm.
I like him, but I think even with the players talking to him, so we were my year, I think 2012, we were like 2-10 at one point, still going full goal 9-on-7 or full goal inside run in week 13, week 14, when we shouldn't have pads on. It should be, you know, just a shells practice going through, not going through the motions, but, you know, more teaching than actually physical contact.
More of a walkthrough.
More of a walkthrough. By then,
he's got you guys busting each other in the mouth.
So it was a point where the whole team put their shoulder pads in the middle of the locker room and said, we're not practicing today.
Wow.
Or we're not wearing pads today.
No kidding.
So like as a protest to him.
As a protest to him, like, listen, we're not wearing pads today. This is ridiculous.
That didn't get out, did it?
Week 14, it didn't because we were sorry.
Yeah.
when you win two games all year, stuff like that doesn't get out. But
I get
week 13, week 14, we're wearing full pads and hitting. And then a guy tore his Achilles that same year, and then that was the end of his career. So guys were like, listen, he's stubborn. He's not listening to the veterans. We had like guys like Aaron Ross on the team.
Mm-hmm.
We had guys like DeJuan Landry, Paul Posluszny, Daryl Smith, and he wouldn't listen to those veteran, Rasheem Mathis, and he wouldn't listen to those veteran guys. So I can see why he kind of got let go.
How did he respond when you guys did that? When you guys put the pads in the middle of the room and you said, we're not practicing today?
You know what's funny? He actually cried in front of us like 3 or 4 times that year. It was interesting. Or 2 or 3 times that year.
Cried?
Like physically tears.
Wow.
And I didn't know how to feel. with him. I'm like, I don't know what to do.
What were the situations where he was crying?
He was just trying to, I guess, motivate us or let us know how much he cares about us.
Shows how much it means to him.
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know if this is real or what. But how he reacted is next time just talk to me. And the guy's like, we tried to talk to you.
Yeah.
But you weren't listening.
So that was one of the times he broke down?
No, he didn't break down that time. He just kind of let us know, like, hey, you don't have to do that. Next time, just come talk to me. But one of the guys stood up and said, listen, we tried to talk to you.
Yeah, and he was only there for a season, right?
Yes, because we had
Gus Bradley came in the next year.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, wow.
Smart guy, leader, very hard worker. Played in the league for a long time, knows the game. He's got all the qualities of a head coach.
That's Bill O'Brien when he was asked about Cecil Shorts. No, I'm just kidding. Bill O'Brien asked about Mike Vrabel earlier today. Vrabel, of course, defensive coordinator here last year, linebackers coach for a few years before that. I know he was on the opposite side of the ball from you, Cecil, but in your season with the Texans, what are your memories of Mike Vrabel?
Fun guy. Very fun. All the linebackers or defensive guys loved him. He did a great job being relational with the players, and a lot of guys trusted him because of his background, his Super Bowls, the way he carried himself. He was a confident guy. So a lot of guys looked up to him. A lot of guys liked him, and I think he did a good job while he was here. I never seen him being the head coach, but that's what he really wanted to do.
Interesting. So it's because the kind of party line on Vrabel was everybody thought he was a fast track to be a head coach, but you didn't necessarily see him being a head coach at some point.
No, I thought he was good at what he did, linebackers. I never seen him. In my opinion, I never thought he would be good at the whole team game management.
Yeah.
That's something that's not for everybody.
Right.
And if you specialize in a certain thing, be good at what you specialize in. I'm not sure he's very good at game management. And I could be wrong. Just I didn't see that from my time with him.
His 1 year as coordinator would indicate that the possession arrow is pointed more towards your opinion than everybody else's opinion, because it was a defense that was – I get it, were injured.
It comes with an asterisk, yeah.
I get it. Rich, even when they were full strength, they looked disorganized at times, and they certainly looked very disorganized down the stretch. Look, I get it. Going 1-8 down the stretch can do a lot of things probably mentally to a team in terms of how dialed in they are. I do think Vrabel is really good teaching. Like, yes, as a position coach, he strikes me as somebody. Like, every linebacker he's coached here that I can remember all got better under his watch.
He's a very good position coach. Yeah. I think that's what his strength is, coaching his position, the position that he played, the position that he played for 15 years and won Super Bowls in. Now, like I said, the game management part.
CEO.
Being in charge of every single offense, defense, special teams, running game plans, watching film on the whole. I'm not sure if he's, I don't want to say capable, but, you know, that's a lot to go from just a position coach 1 year.
Yep.
And then go into, you know, being a head coach.
So what about a couple of thoughts on the game? How big a loss is Delanie Walker going down?
Well, that's a huge loss. That's probably their biggest target going into the year. Corey Davis hasn't really showed much. A couple other young receivers haven't really showed much. So I think him and Derrick Henry were the Deion Lewis now. He had a good game last week.
He did. He had over 100 yards from scrimmage, yeah.
So I think that's a huge loss, especially if Mariota is not playing. So now you have to trust your backup quarterback with your young receivers.
Word is today he will play, but he's banged up.
He's Mariota? On an interesting play, too. It was a run play.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was a late hit or not. That is an interesting play to me because I feel like he had no reason to get hit. He handed the ball off already and boom.
Right.
He's had a lot of injury issues. I mean, they got a big decision to make with Marcus Mariota.
They do.
Coming up pretty soon. He's coming up. He was drafted in 15.
So him and Jameis, same class, right?
Same class. One and two in that draft. Jameis is a big decision with Jameis for totally different reasons. But Mariota, this is his fourth year. I'm sure they exercised his fifth year option.
Yeah.
So they've got time to do it. But most of the time when you're making decisions on these quarterbacks, if they're first round picks, it doesn't get to the fifth year option. You're doing something after you're doing something with a year left on the deal. I don't know. Like, if you were the general manager in Tennessee, you got to re-sign the guy, obviously. But man, it can't be where Marcus Mariota is the guy who's the next one to jump up to the top of the list, right?
You can go similar to what Blake Bortles in Jacksonville. So make it prove it this past year, and then give him a 2-year deal, see how he does. You're going to have to pay him some money.
Yeah.
That's just what it is, the first-round pick, the name, But yeah, you're right. You can't give him a $100 million contract. He hasn't earned it.
Bortles is a great. He's closer to Bortles than he is to Aaron Rodgers, you know, or Matt Ryan, or these guys are getting $30 million a year.
Very similar. I think Bortles actually has been more healthy.
Yeah.
Than Mariota. And Mariota shows flashes, but I don't know if he's really if he's been in the right system since he's been in the league.
Yeah.
Because he's in a special system at Oregon that makes him so great. Then he gets in the NFL. I'm not sure if it's going his way. He got malarkied
for a couple of years.
Bunch of malarkey.
They stuck him in that power running game. He drafted a guy out of Oregon, and they treat him like he's from Stanford. And they have issues along the offensive line right now. I think Taylor Lewan got banged up in that game on Sunday.
So this week, it was a slow week for the pass rush. This week it should pick up with the injuries that you see and with what you saw in the second half from the defensive line. So hopefully it'll continue this week.
It doesn't happen this week. It better happen against the Giants with your guy Ereck Flowers, Rich.
You can't go 0-2. You can't go 0-2.
No, you can't.
You can't. And this is, I mean, Tyler, I think Honey Badger said it on Twitter. It's a must win. You can't go 0-2.
Sean, you brought up Jameis Winston. There were a couple of things I wanted to ask Cecil's opinion on, and one of them was, okay, two things. Number one, can you imagine a world in which week 4 rolls around and Dirk Cutter decides his best chance to win is Ryan Fitzpatrick and not Jameis Winston?
I actually can. Yeah. I actually can because, like you guys said, Fitz has done this before. He's made it hard on coaches before. He's come in and, like you said, teased people and throws for 400 yards. And I think he had, what, 4 touchdowns, 5 total touchdowns last week?
Yeah. In New Orleans. That's a tough place to win.
It is a tough place to play. And he's done it before. I think that what you do with Jameis, though, is critical because – Fitz is 34, 35 years old. He's not going to be your franchise guy moving forward.
Right.
But if you're 3-0, 4-0.
Yeah. I mean, they've got Pittsburgh and Philly in their next two games. It's not going to be easy to be 3-0.
So we'll see. So if they're 1-2, I think it's a no-brainer. You throw Jameis in there. But if the offense is rolling, what do you do?
They're only a 3-point underdog to Philadelphia. And it's in Tampa, so they're a home dog.
They were the biggest dog at New Orleans last week.
They were, and they're only a 3-point home dog to the defending Super Bowl champions, who will have Nick Foles starting at quarterback, not Carson Wentz, but Nick Foles is on a nice little winning streak himself now.
He gets the job done, and that defense looks good.
How about that? Philadelphia and Tampa Bay. Boy, if you were a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan and you got your season tickets, this is their home opener. If you got your season tickets like back in May or something, or you signed up for them, or in April when the schedule comes out, right? Yeah. And you're a Tampa Bay season ticket holder, you're like, oh, our home opener, the defending Super Bowl champs with Carson Wentz against our guy Jameis, and it's Fitzy versus Nick Foles.
Battle of the backups.
The biggest teases of backups of all time. Yeah. The biggest Cinderellas that turn into pumpkins in the history of the league.
Yep.
Nick Foles and Ryan Fitzpatrick. I asked you during a break. You came here in 2015. Fitzy was already gone by the time you got here.
Yep. Okay. Fitzy was gone.
But everybody loves Fitzy from what
everybody had. Lovely things to say about him.
Yeah.
Every offensive player, like, man, I wish we would have played him all year. Or they talked highly of him.
So your Texan teammates here were saying that about Fitzy from the year before.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Everybody loved Fitzy on offense.
Buccaneer locker room is high on Fitzmagic now.
That energy, the energy he brings, the fact that he's willing to try to run somebody over, which is not smart.
38 yards on the ground. It's always ultimately
but
his undoing.
Passion, the way he plays the game, people love it and people respect it.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to make sure I asked you about. And I had an all due respect story on the show yesterday, stupid people doing stupid things. And it was all about the Cleveland Browns.
Oh, here we go.
And how in last week's game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, when the Browns got the football for the first time in the game, unbeknownst to the media, teammates, a lot of people watching the game, they rolled out, they opened the game in a jumbo formation. Three tight ends on one side, a lone receiver on the other side. That receiver was Josh Gordon.
Josh Gordon.
This was days after Hugh Jackson delivered what amounted to a soliloquy to the Cleveland media about how Gordon did not deserve to start that game over all the guys that had been there in camp in the preseason working so hard. And later he called it a miscommunication with Todd Haley.
How?
We all saw Hard Knocks, and I'm going back to episode 1 when they had their differences in the meeting room. Yep. I think Haley's coming for Hugh Jackson. I don't believe that was an accident. I think that was Haley saying,
saboteur!
You've given me control of the offense. I'm taking control of the offense.
You think so?
I do. I mean, how else can you explain it? When Hugh Jackson went out of his way to tell the world, and he must have told Todd Haley, that Gordon is going to play a lot, but he does not start this game, and he started.
You're right. I think that was done on purpose.
It feels like it.
Saboteur!
There's no way that as the head coach, as the offensive coordinator. They don't talk about who's starting the game, what play you're starting the game
right
with.
Scripted
no
at the beginning,
it's
right?
Scripted. The first plays, first 10 to 15 plays are always scripted.
And
so
the fact
it's
that
no
it was the jumbo,
they don't know.
The jumbo with three tight ends on one side
just
and
one
the
receiver.
Only
one
wide
receiver.
Receiver on the
That's
field.
That's on purpose. You're right. I believe you. That's on purpose.
Yeah.
That's
incredible. Worth keeping Hugh, an eye on.
Yes, and I think Hugh, if Hugh doesn't start the year right, he'd probably be gone.
He is the favorite. I have some odds. We'll get to him in the 5 o'clock hour just because we don't have time to get to him now. I won't fully give it away, but I have odds on who the first coach who's going to be fired is after week one.
Ooh.
Hugh's fairly high. No big surprise. Hugh is fairly high up the list.
Shocking.
If you watched Hard Knocks, then you know that Hugh is, you don't have to go far down the list till your finger runs across the name Hugh Jackson.
I can't believe we tied. I'm a Browns fan. I'm from yeah. Cleveland. I can't. Six
I love
turnovers
that you say we.
And we can't win?
Yeah.
Six turnovers?
Yeah.
And we can't win the game? A block field goal? We did the ultimate Browns stuff. Like, that's what the Browns
yeah,
do.
It's sad, but true.
Oh, my gosh.
And Hugh Jackson seems like a nice guy. But nice guys
don't win games.
Aren't necessarily the best guys to have running the show.
Yeah.
You gotta
You're
win.
A nice guy, Rich.
You got to win.
I don't think I'd want you coaching my football team.
You definitely wouldn't want me. I mean, look, I'm wearing a Brock Osweiler jersey to the show
yeah,
today.
Sure. And you're acting proud of it, too. That's
I
the
am
crazy
proud
thing.
Of it.
What did you think of the John Gruden and the Raiders on Monday Night Football?
They're going to have a long season. I don't know what's going on over there. It all started with Mac.
Yeah.
And then his little rant after the game, you know, oh, he didn't want to play here.
Yeah.
No, he's wanted more money. He never said he wanted to play. He just wanted more money. Y'all,
right.
y'all didn't want to give it to him. A player like that, I'm not going to say Hall of Fame yet, but a caliber player like that.
He's trending
in
that
a
direction.
Lifetime,
definitely
once
on
a lifetime
track.
Player, you figure out a way to pay the man.
Yeah.
You don't just give him up.
He seems to be taking to Chicago okay.
Oh, my gosh. That first half? Who needs preseason, right?
Yeah, exactly. There's the argument against right there.
Right, right.
Right there. Cecil Shorts jumps in with us here every Wednesday on the show. I guess I should say we hope that, you know, these – I know that there's going to be a Wednesday here at some point where you're going to be playing Daddy Daycare here at some point.
Yes, yes.
So we hope that Wednesday is not next Wednesday. We need these three to stay in the oven for a little while longer, right?
Yes, we need to stay as long as they can. At least
right.
one more week. One
All right,
more week.
Cool. So sending positive vibes by saying, yes. Cecil, we will see you next Wednesday.
Hey, appreciate
here.
You guys.
Good luck on the home front. Great to see you again.
Yeah, hey, same here.
Good stuff as always from Cecil Shorts, former Houston Texan, and of course, friend of the station and friend of the show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.